the line, all the way from London, we have the inimitable Dr. Masquerade. Hello, Doctor.
Hello, Richard. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, thank you very much. Fit and fruity. Now, I know you're fit and fruity, and you're celebrating this whole year. You're celebrating because you. I was going to say you're 20. You're 20 years old.
Hello, I'm 20 years old. I sound like an old man. No, it's 20 years of Mad Bad Masquerade. Not 20 years of Dr. M, because Dr. M came a bit later, but 20 years of Masquerade, and wow, 2 decades gone.
Yeah, 2 decades gone, and not running out of ideas by the sounds of things and by the multiple Twitters that go on.
Yes, well, the tweeting I've discovered, thanks to you and Seb and a few other people, has a very powerful mechanism. First of all, if you use it as much as I do, it drives people mad. It fills up their Twitter feed. No, but it's just a great way of getting your ideas and thoughts out as they come to you. And as you know from being in the Batcave, I'll be in here from not as early as I could be these days, but be in here and I'll tweet out some ideas. And things occur to you and you hear a bit of music or something relates to something else, and it's very kind of, you know, one leads to another and you come up with the idea. So this morning, as you probably saw, I tweeted out all the things I'm doing between now and June in the anniversary year.
And let's recap on that, because it's 20 years and you've had a special celebration in January, which is Reloaded, which we'll talk about in a second. But yes, you've got all these anniversary things going on. Just run us through some of them.
Great. Okay, well, you know, in no specific order, but kind of working logically from the actual day that Masquerade will be 20. 5th of April, Taxman note, you will be getting no return from me, it will be reloaded. On the 5th of April was the actual day 20 years ago when, you know, through conversation, a couple of glasses of wine, a bit of a joke and a giggle, I came up with the name Masquerade. I didn't realise till many years later that Masquerade had A-D-E on the end. Everyone said, yeah, you know, that's why you did it, but didn't realise that. So anyway, 5th of April was the actual day, and yourself and a great number of other members of the team, like Jason and Silvio and Colin and Leone, will be up, and we'll be doing mad things in London. To be planned, to be finalised, but I thought that day would be a celebration of Masquerade in terms of all of us being together in London, moving on the go in the Batmobile and outfits, doing things for charity, filming, podcasting, photographing. So that would be a celebratory day.
It sounds absolutely barking mad. And
Barking mad.
And why not?
And then young Seb said to me, "Father, oh intelligent but crazy one, don't you think your website's looking a little bit dated?" Now, when your son, who's 17 and going places, says that to you, two things happen to you. One is you think, can't really argue back. It's quite a good comment. And two is, must do something about it. And young Seb, being a kind of a web techie guy with all his contacts and people, we are rebranding and relaunching the website as well. And that will also be on the 5th. So the 5th is a great big day of celebration. And Dr. M, in his inimitable wisdom of madness, thought 1st of April, April Fool's Day, let's use that as a 4-day countdown. So lots of mad tweeting and little kind of teas and stuff for the 4 days before. Then you'll join us on the 5th and we'll have a great big celebration day.
I love the idea that you're counting down from April Fool's Day. I think that's absolutely brilliant.
Yes, perfect. And then obviously between now and then, so February, we'll see, we're in February now, we'll see various little projects and things coming to fruition. March, we'll be working on some other bits and bobs. But certainly in the first 6 months leading up to, you know, the first half of the 20th year, Club Masquerade, another great 70s, 80s funk night. Hopefully we'll have some guest artists playing on that, so that'll be a chance to dress up and enjoy Ronnie Capri and Co. at Club Masquerade. The Genesis to Broadway repeat concert with Warren Wills, the virtuoso composer and pianist, musical director. And that will be kind of more like G2B, which is the initials of it, Genesis to Broadway first. This will be Genesis to Birdland, so lots of jazz. Give Seb a chance to play his sax. I have a few other guest artists like Straker and Lee John and Colin Roy. And then, you know, well, 6 months into the year, expect the unexpected.
Your catchphrase, of course.
Yes, although I must admit, I am thinking of adding to that. What do you think about this, Richard? Perfect the unperfected.
Ooh, there we are. Launch into the third decade with a new catchphrase.
Yes, I thought that was an interesting. Expect the unexpected, perfect the unperfected. You know, a little play on words. I've always liked playing with words, and but meaningfully, not, you know, not rubbish words, but it, you know, good words, good dialogue, good syntax, and just getting the brain cells going.
And that will inspire people to and of course they, I mean, you, as you say, you've got 20 years behind you, so people are already expecting the unexpected, and now they're expecting more from the master.
Well, very much, you say, master.
Well, I would think that after, you know, 20 years is a good apprenticeship, so you must now be the master of what you do.
Yeah. Confucius say, man with 20 years behind him only have good times ahead of him.
Well, let's hope so. Tell us about the Reloaded event that you had in January.
Yeah, well, Reloaded was very interesting in how it came about, because about this time last year, give or take a few weeks before, I kind of woke up one morning and thought to myself, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write the Book of Masquerade. You know, Expect the Unexpected, great title for the book. You know, anecdotes and stories in a kind of a pocketbook guide, idiot-proof guide to how to do an event, how to run an event, and do it. And, you know, great idea. And I suddenly thought, God, I'm going to have to write that. And writing, which I love to do, takes a lot of time and a lot of determination. Not that I'm undisciplined. It's just that with all the other things going on in life and juggling all the balls, sit down and write a book properly is going to take time. So then I thought, oh, actually, you know, why don't I make it a film? Because I've got hours and hours and weeks and years of footage from parties and events that we've been filming for, you know, best part of 15, 16 years, because my background is a film and TV guy, etc. So I went back through hours of footage and thought, you know what, let's make a documentary and let's call it Masquerade Reloaded, because I was listening to one of Seb's great jazz albums by Cannonball Adderley, and it was called Cannonball Reloaded. So I thought, Masquerade Reloaded, and there we have it. There came the idea. Started off with a couple of days filming and shoots at the CVS Bat Studio with Glyn, and away we went, and the next thing you knew, we had a two-hour film ready to rock and roll and premiered on the 21st.
And so where did you premiere?
Well, actually, an interesting find, and here's something for all you lovely listeners who like to find unusual and different places. On Borough High Street, SE1, there is a building as you come out of the station and look across it, and it just looks like your bog standard conference and networking type of venue. It's called Prospero House, nothing to do with the Tempest. And you go inside, and it's really quite funky. It's a kind of an old Victorian building, but you know, they've put in the trappings of new technical stuff, great lighting system, sound system. It's got some really superb rooms on three floors, and it does great catering. I had the pleasure of working there and doing some stuff with London Launch last year, and I thought, this will be a great place. And it so happened that I bid on an online auction for a prize, which was, you know, this event to be had in January at this place. And I got it at some ridiculously cheap price. I won't say anything about it, but it all went to charity. And then I thought, well, let's do it there. So, you know, one and one added up to make two, and two added up to make five, as it does in Dr. Masquerade's arithmetic book. And away we went. Next thing we knew, we had a premiere.
Wow. Fantastic. So who did you invite? Who came to this premiere?
Well, we invited lots of people. First and foremost, there was a pre-film dinner for 72 in the end, 72 close family, friends and suppliers. So my lovely mum and Lisa and Karen and family and the kids and their partners. And then, you know, all the lovely Masquerade team, some of whom you knew, like Jason and Silvio, Colin Leone, the musicians. And next thing I knew, there were seven tables full of 72 people who've been with me, you know, these past two decades. And it was a really refreshing, lovely early evening with drinks and canapes and a few speeches and some nice early video clips from the early years over dinner. Lovely three-course dinner. Then we turned the room around and invited all the rest of the people who came at 8:30 to watch the film. So we had about 140 people in the end, and there were tweeters there like LeSanto, Glenn, who was blogging away. Even the picture of the penguin went out. When the penguin walked out in the middle of the film, he said, "What?"
Oh, that's it. Sounds, it's a shame that I couldn't get there. I was working away on
you were
video.
Being corporate, but we will get you a copy of Reloaded. I think you've got the trailer and a couple of the first cuts, which you've looked at.
Yes.
And you will get a complete box set signed by the Doctor and team. How about that?
Ooh, I look forward to that. What is unusual there? You say, you know, expect the unexpected. That is unexpected from an event manager to invite his team to a celebratory event where you have a film to watch and a dinner and a good old knees up. I can't think, having worked in the corporate entertainment industry with some of the large companies like Penguins and people like that, who I get on with or used to get on with very well and knew when they were sort of setting it all up, but they, I don't know, maybe they're just carrying on and
I
just...
I know exactly where you're coming from.
You are a very different sort of businessman.
I'm going to put it in the words that I think you want to say, but would be difficult for you to say, bearing in mind that you have that supply relationship. I have always felt, and it's something that I really believe in, and the more I do it, the stronger that belief comes and the stronger the mechanics of doing it become. And that is that, you know, if you have a good team and great people around you, right, they are what make you great. You know, so I liken myself, and I know you're a historical man and you read lots of great books about battles. I liken myself, on a very serious note, to a military commander and leader, and I have troops with me. Now, those troops can win a war for me or win a battle for me, or they can run. And if I treat them with respect and look after them and nurture them like the family they are at Masquerade, they will perform not only on the job, but they will perform, you know, socially in terms of a well-bonded, well-structured group of people. So I think that's one of the great secrets of Masquerade. I make no bones about, you know, wanting to look after people and you know, act a bit like the Godfather. And it kind of comes back because I know people like Jason and other people say, it's just great working for you, Aid. It's always a pleasure and it's almost like getting paid to have fun. And some of the other companies, well, they don't quite get that. They say, you know, here's the contract, here's the hours. And you think, hang on, I've been marked up 500%. I'm working until some ridiculous time. I've got no food and drink. I'm not even being said thank you. Mm. You know, that doesn't do it for me.
No, and I mean, as an entertainer, and as you say, you know, you get contracted in myself, and I've worked. You do turn up, and you do get treated in that sort of dismissive way by a lot of people because they are running around and they're very busy and they're trying to impress their client, and they just assume that you will turn up and perform. And sometimes, you know, you do understand that as a performer that is your role to come in and be the performing monkey and do it. But what you're doing is you're bringing people in who are going to bring an extra magic and sparkle and make that event 20 times better than an event where people are just treating it as, well, I'm only here and this is the amount of money I'm being paid. I'll do the time and go.
Yeah.
And people will want to give the extra. And I think that is very inspiring to hear and for other people to see. And I'm amazed that more of the event organisers have not twigged onto it, to be honest.
Well, to be honest with you, it's good they haven't twigged on because...
Well, yes, of course.
You know, 20 years on now, I've set a kind of a blazing trail of kind of craziness and being different and maverick and off the wall. And I think anybody who wants to kind of keep up with that, good luck to them. Healthy competition, and I'm always there to kind of, you know, help, mentor, support people. But I think, you know, some of them are going to have to seriously get into their Batmobiles to catch me up because I think I've taken Masquerade on a trail 20... it's very funny... just to say that Karen just walked into the Batcave and brought back the funny gift I left on the bed, Richard, and I'll just tell you what it is. She'll come into the back office. I left her a nice framed picture of Pam Anderson and I on her bed, thinking that might amuse her. She said, she's looking at me saying, yes, thanks very much. That's really not funny.
Yes, I can see why she might not be terribly amused.
But actually, I did meet Pam Anderson. Did I tell you, deviating, I met Pam Anderson with Warren Wills, her panto is the genie, in December, and I took Seb and Claudia with me. We sat in the pit with Warren, and she was the genie. And then we went back to her backstage dressing room to say hello. And there was me kind of, you know, putting on some aftershave and brushing my hair up to look all good. And she started talking to Seb.
What a surprise.
She started talking to Seb, and she said, you know, like, chatting him up. And then she said, what are you doing? He said, I play the sax. She goes, I used to play the sax. And I'm just thinking, I didn't even get a look in.
Oh, a shame.
It is a shame. I mean, he's, you know, he's younger, he's more good-looking, he's talented. You know, I have the same problem with my son.
But, coming back to the kind of philosophy, I mean, the other thing which I do, which you know, which I think is completely mad and it's probably because since the age of about two or three, I was dressing up, running around, being a character and entertaining myself, is that I always dress up and lead by example. So I'm always Vlad or Carlos or Ronnie Capri or Dr. M on the event, dressed up with my team. And they just think, well, hang on, if Aid's going to do it, we can get stuck in as well.
Mm. I mean, I personally think it's a very clever way, because you see, having turned up at events, you see the... you know, they book themselves in as an event manager and they're walking around in a suit and the agent and what have you. And they're keeping an eye on making sure the acts are doing what they're supposed to be doing, that everything's running on time, etc., etc. But you always feel slightly intimidated when they're walking around and just sort of going, oh, I better get up and do something. Whereas if the event manager is actually performing and having a laugh with you, I can quite easily see how you would just go, yeah, you know, you're going to not have that intimidation thing. You're not going to feel like you're being pressured to work. You're just going to feel like you're having a lot of fun and the event is going to be successful.
And it flows. And
yeah.
It absolutely flows.
And of course, because you're used to dressing up and performing, you know what an artist will need. And many times I've turned up at an event and they'll say, well, here's your dressing room, and you go in and it's the public loos. And,
exactly.
You know, and sometimes there is nowhere else to go, and you do accept that. But you say, look, I've got my personal stuff. I do need to store that, because obviously I've got my wallet and various things. I can't have that in if I'm dressed up in a genie outfit or as a fakir or whatever it might be.
As a what?
As a fakir, you know. Somebody,
oh, I thought you said that.
Somebody who lies on a bed of nails. And
you're right, fakir, aren't you?
Yes, and eats fire and all that kind of malarkey, as I used to do. And you say, well...
you're doing that. I remember seeing photos of you doing that. I remember the time you did that. I didn't see you in person with Jason at Chessington.
Gosh, yeah, that is going back a hell of a long way.
Stuart Fell, Tarot.
Yes, that's it.
He came to Reloaded as well, you know. He and Jason were both there.
Oh, fantastic. It would have been so nice to have been there. I haven't seen Jason for so long, and I haven't seen Stuart for years. He probably wouldn't even recognise me. The fakir thing, I sort of used to do this danger show, which would involve walking on glass, lying on a bed of nails, juggling and eating and blowing fire, rolling fire all over me, you know, with the bald head and everything. And I had a few muscles at that point before everything went south, thanks to the eye problem. And I used to get booked all over the blinking place. And it was great because there weren't many people who lie on a bed of nails.
Exactly.
And so often, and I'd often get the Indian themed gigs, which was quite...
You nailed it in one.
Yeah. so they would turn up, and of course, you know, down to the tanning office, salon.
You say it's a satanic office.
It's a bit like a satanic office. Down there and get yourself tanned up, you know, when an event is coming up, make sure you're all looking good, and then you drive off to the gig, and there you go. And of course, some gigs, they just had no idea what really, that somebody had suggested it to them. You could obviously see that somebody had said, oh, yeah, what you want is one of these, and a guy who lies on a bed of nails. And they'd gone, yeah, that'd be great. And you turn up and you do realise then you're just a bit of moving wallpaper, really, or a bit of set dressing as people come in and you're just lying on this bed of nails. And you say, well, I can't really lie on the bed of nails for 2 hours because actually, you know, they are real nails and it's more of a performance. You sell it to an audience. Oh. So eventually you then... you have to sort of talk to the client and say, well, maybe if I was to do, you know, several little sort of impromptu shows throughout the evening, that would... And, oh, yeah. And then when you sell it to the client and you show them what you're going to do, then they understand it so much better and it makes so much more of an impact.
Well, I think from now on, you and I should agree terminology that this year, any event manager walking around any event, especially a masquerade event, in a suit with a briefcase and a PowerPoint, should be A, forced to be on the bed of nails, C, should be trodden on the bed of nails, and C, if that hasn't done him or her in, we should fire-breathe them and basically torch them.
I think that is a very, very good idea, and it's often what I've wanted to do at the end of a gig.
My goodness, we do have a mad laugh together, don't we?
It is an unusual world that we live in, and of course, it is sometimes, I think, sometimes we just forget that other people live in such straight-laced worlds and they do not see beyond the sort of the narrow defines that they're walking. Whereas, you know, one minute we may be in an office talking quite straight to somebody about an event and being very serious, and then the next minute we've suddenly donned a costume and we're performing like some buffoon, but masterly controlling the audience and making sure that everybody's happy.
Absolutely.
And it is a weird juxtaposition to be in a daily world, whereas most people just have that 9-to-5 go to work and narrow sort of world.
Well, you know, one of the great things that came out of Reloaded in terms of putting the film together, doing new interviews, catching up with old faces, new faces, looking back over the footage of years, in that 2 hours and 5 minutes of Reloaded, 1 hour and 15 was interviews, short, sharp, punchy stuff, footage from parties and events, you know, from 10 or 15 years, all cut together with voiceover titles and linked nicely. And the second part was basically a documentary about the making of the Cotton Club party on the 18th of December last year, the one that sadly you were stuck in your gangster outfit at Worthing Station being looked at with your Tommy gun.
Yes.
And put the two together and it made the film. But the great thing about that is it was just a trip down memory lane for everybody. There was my mum in the front row reliving, you know, the madness of hearing the stories about it. There were people in the back, Jason, Silvio, Stuart, Fell, Colin Roy, the musicians, saying, oh, look, that was me. You know, that was... And in that 2 hours, there was just an enormous legacy. And someone who'd never been to a masquerade event, was a friend of the family, came that night and said, I just can't believe how much you guys do. It's just incredible. You do everything. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, actually, there's not a lot we don't do.
I mean, this is the sort of thing you get people who work for, say, with Cadbury's and the takeover with Kraft, and they've, you know, they're worried about their jobs and they work in the factory and they do what they do, and they may have worked there for 30 years, but unfortunately, you know, you show them what they've done for 30 years, and no disrespect to them in any shape or form, but the sort of variety that you would have done and that sort of I've done in the last 20 years is so extreme that you can look at a film and you think, my goodness, you know, I forgot I did that. I forgot I even used to, you know, and it can boggle your mind that you did it yourself.
Well, I'll tell you what was boggling Lesanto's mind, because, of course, he's a new friend through Twitter, very connected guy, knows a lot of people, quite influential. He came and blogged a few pictures and wrote a little bit, and then there was something also from a couple of people. But he came to the party and he realised the one thing in a masquerade party that really rocks out, and that is the babes.
Well, yes, of course, I've seen the photos.
That's right.
And I'm looking forward to seeing them in real life.
Yes, and you'll be podcasting a few of those birds.
Oh, yes. I've got to get myself a little bit more fitter and off the steroids and all the other things. So that
Stop taking the drugs.
Yes, absolutely.
I think in our countdown from the 1st to the 5th, maybe I could just use this platform quickly for saying that anyone listening to this when it goes out and it's edited in Russian with subtitles in Hungarian, that Dr. M is now talking to you and will be coming back to you with a new show, a new podcast show that will be a regular feature thanks to my new executive producer, Mr. Richard Vobes, and it will be called the Masquerade Fusion Show. It'll be a bit of Doctor Room, a bit of fun, a bit of banter, a bit of interviewing, and lots of smooth jazz.
I know you love your smooth jazz.
Great, I love it. And Seb says to me, like, well, you know, it's not really what I want to play as a serious jazz musician. And I understand that. And I know he'll want to kind of do the artist bit and play the music he wants to play, like Charlie Parker and Miles Davis and all that great classic stuff. But I kind of guess smooth jazz for me at my age, going to be 49 this month, it's just easy to listen to. So I can switch it on in the morning on the big monitor and on the laptop, as you know, with the big booming bass, and I can just get into doing anything and listen to it. It doesn't interfere, doesn't make me think too hard. That may sound a bit disrespectful to it, but it's the kind of jazz you can just clock into and it just soaks into you.
It seems like it's a world in its own. It's an area that I don't really know myself, but I have a horrible feeling I will do.
You're going to be knowing a lot more of it when we do Jazz Jazz Reloaded is the new documentary for this year. There you go. Jazz Reloaded. It's going to be a documentary film about the history of jazz and smooth jazz, taking in, you know, the past, the present and the future. Some great interviews with a couple of fantastic smooth jazz musicians. I'm hoping Brian Carlson, who's coming here from LA and made to do a tour and do a couple of gigs and stuff here, will be part of the documentary. Great smooth jazz keyboard player. tweet about him all the time. Lovely guy, going places, in his 30s, but going to be very, very, very big. So there you go. Check out Brian Culbertson.
Ooh, there's a name. There's a name. How did you get into the jazz?
I got into the jazz because of my late father, Aaron. He was a jazz saxophonist, had his own jazz band in India. He was a young medic. In fact, he was a bit of everything. He was a kind of a mini Dr. Masquerade. He used to be a boxer, a badminton player, a lifeguard. He obviously trained to be a doctor and a band leader. He used to have his own jazz band.
Wow.
Which used to play on Saturday nights in Calcutta, where he grew up. So, yeah, that kind of came through. I grew up with jazz and music and played the piano and trumpet. And then, of course, Seb came along and Seb learnt the sax with my dad, and he's going on to great things now. So music's always been part of my life, and I kind of guess that, for me, it would be unbelievable to be in a life without music.
Mm.
Music just is something that has to be there for my soul.
I think what we need to do is one day is to do Desert Island Discs with Dr. Masquerade and get you to choose 10 discs that you would take to a desert island.
That's a great idea.
Isn't that a good idea?
Why don't we make that? I'll tell you what. Why don't we agree this now? As part of the Masquerade podcast idea in series,
yes,
we should now and then get a guest artist on to do a desert island.
Yeah, absolutely, that would be fantastic.
Yes,
and we can play them in and they can tell us all about it, just as they do on BBC Radio 4.
Absolutely. Let's have a think about that. I'm sure there's a few people we'd like. I think we should invite Boris Johnson to be on our desert island.
That would be very hilarious.
It's not an unduly mad thing to think that you and I could set up, you know, doing a desert island podcast with the mayor.
Well, why not? Why not? That's, you know, the mayor is there. He is a servant. I may not be a member of the London clan, but you are. So I'll bring the microphone. I don't know. I wonder if he's actually been on Desert Island Disc. But either way, it would be hilarious to find out what Boris Johnson's music would be.
I'm sure he likes a bit of jazz.
I'm sure there must be in his collection of music a bit of jazz. Fantastic.
Good stuff.
Well, listen, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you as ever, Dr. M, on this very special reloaded podcast for the new decade of perfect the what was it again?
Perfect the unperfected.
Perfect the unperfected. And that is obviously going to be your mission if you choose to accept it.
Mission it's possible.
Yes. And probable.
This podcast will now self-destruct in 5 seconds. So, but Richard, it's been great talking to you. And, you know, clearly in terms of the year ahead and what we do, you know, it's lovely that you're going to be part of it. We know that you have a definite place in the asylum up here with us at Masquerade. And we're all looking forward, you know, all your old friends and new friends at Masquerade, to having you come up and do some mad stuff with us. So, Dr. Bowes, as Ronnie used to say, it's good night from me.
And it's good night from him.